It's 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Friday, July 31st, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, the Kenai performers prepare to stage a new show for its first run ever. But first, should school board members have term limits? That's a question the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly members are asking again. An ordinance going before the Assembly Tuesday would cap school board terms to 2 consecutive full terms, the same limit put on Assembly members and the borough mayor. Once reaching their term limit, a school board member could serve a potential additional term after waiting about 6 months. Right now, the Assembly does not technically have the authority to put term limits on school board members, but state lawmakers passed a bill this year that would change that. A bill on the governor's desk would give a municipality's governing body the authority to alter terms by passing an ordinance. It's not the first time the subject has come up on the Kenai Peninsula. Almost 20 years ago, voters passed an initiative that would have subjected the school board to term limits, according to an assembly memo. A year later, a court ruled that initiative illegal under state law, which it said did not permit term limits for school board members. In 2023, assembly members passed a non-binding resolution that asked the Alaska legislature to change that law. The ordinance is being sponsored by Assemblymember Dale Eicher, who represents Sterling and Funny River. In a memo, he says the limits create more opportunities for new candidates, bring in new perspectives, and prevent the concentration of power. Local elections often see low participation rates by candidates and voters. Of the 6 school board seats that have gone on the Kenai Peninsula Borough's municipal ballots in the last 2 years, only half were contested races. Senate Bill 143 passed the legislature in May and was sent to Governor Mike Dunleavy last week. Now that the bill is on his desk, he could either sign it, veto it, or let it pass into law without his signature. He has until August 12th to act. Assembly members will only decide whether to introduce the ordinance Tuesday. If it is introduced, a final vote and public hearing would be held in September. School administrators and librarians across the state are worried about losing a federal subsidy that drastically reduces their internet bill. That's because the FCC is reviewing the E-rate program that, for 3 decades, has helped schools and libraries across the nation lower their connectivity costs, including on the Kenai Peninsula. In the past, FCC Chairman Brendan Carr has suggested the subsidy should be reduced or eliminated. Alaska Public Media's Lori Townsend has the story.
Tiki Levinson has been an Alaska librarian for decades, first in the Bristol Bay District at the Naknek School, and now as the public librarian in Delta Junction. She was the school librarian in Naknek when the E-rate subsidy first became available in the 1990s. She says it was transformative.
We knew it had a lot of potential to help students, but we had no idea how we were going to be able to afford to bring that tool to our community. And so the E-rate program opened that door and let us start offering educational access to the internet.
Levinson says the subsidy for the state is enormous.
It is multiple millions of dollars. It is astronomical.
She's not overstating it. Between 2021 and 25, more than $800 million in E-rate subsidies supported 710 different school and library locations in Alaska. NPR reporting notes broadband policy and the Universal Service Fund that pays the subsidy was included in the Project 2025 document as a target to reduce spending. FCC Chair Brendan Carr helped write that chapter in the document and in late June released data raising concerns with pervasive screen time and poor student outcomes as a reason for the review and potential changes. Levinson says in Delta Junction, many elders don't have home internet or online skills, so the library's subsidized internet service helps the seniors file their taxes, schedule medical appointments, and apply for the PFD. She says it even helped a man who got a service dog in the lower 48.
And then he came back here to Delta Junction, and he was able to participate in further training and meetings with the people that provided him with his dog so that he could continue to have the dog in his life.
Tiffany Jackson is the executive director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. She says she's been working with the association's members to advocate for the subsidy in a state with high internet costs. She says hearing the E-rate program was under threat was alarming.
It would be a definite hit to the budget if school districts were to lose E-rate, and they're already facing financial strains with funding levels the way they are in the state.
Jackson says losing the E-rate subsidy could mean some schools will not be able to afford internet access. She says for remote, smaller schools, students need online service to complete required courses.
That's not a unique story for Alaska. My daughter attended school in Sandpoint this last year for eighth grade, and her math teacher was not located within the district, so she had to participate in math remotely.
The FCC did not respond to a request for comment about the specific E-rate program needs in Alaska, but in a statement, an FCC spokesperson said the intent of the review is to ensure the program is supporting good educational outcomes. Tiffany Jackson says losing the subsidy would hit the state hard.
As long as there are Alaskans that don't have access to or can't afford their own broadband connection, it's absolutely critical that our libraries have E-rate and broadband.
Lori Madsen is the director of the Kodiak Public Library. She says losing the E-rate subsidy would increase the library's monthly internet bill from $310 per month to $1,600. And for the small volunteer-run libraries in Port Lyon and Chiniac, it could doom their ability to even stay open. Madsen says not everyone in Alaska has access to high-speed broadband.
And we have people sitting out in the parking lot accessing our internet access so that they can communicate with their families or whoever they're communicating with. So to say that the job is finished is ridiculous.
Alaskans can comment on the FCC's proposal through the Schools, Health, and Libraries Broadband Coalition website at saveourerate.com. It's not clear when the public comment period will officially open. That timeline will happen when the notice of proposed rulemaking is published in the Federal Register. In Anchorage, I'm Lori Townsend.
And finally, the Kenai performers are debuting a new show this weekend. The production, Mystery at the Black Dog Tavern, is being staged for the first time, making its world premiere in Soldotna as part of the American Association of Community Theaters 2026 New Play Fest. KDLL's Jake Dye went to rehearsal and has this story.
The truth is, something very bad happened here 7 years ago.
Oil lamps and a roaring fire light the Black Dog Tavern. Travelers stop to rest for the night. Locals come for company and community, but tonight isn't like any other night.
7 years ago, murder right here at the Black Dog Tavern.
Murder. Bloody murder. That's what it was.
So begins the Kenai Performers production of Mystery at the Black Dog Tavern, which opens this weekend. 7 years after a brash military man was killed at the tavern, his presence lingers. On this night, those gathered in the tavern await a knock on the door from his ghost.
You may want to scream, but don't do it. Don't you dare scream. There's nothing to fear, really, if you can keep your wits about you.
The show was written by Christopher Henke, a former federal attorney from Washington, D.C., who's written more than a dozen plays and screenplays. In Soldotna, Phil Morin directs Henke's latest. The show is set in early 1800s New England, entirely within the titular tavern. The show is new to the world, not just Soldotna. A national nonprofit dedicated to advancing community theater has selected the troupe to host the world premiere. The Kenai Performers are one of six organizations around the country debuting a new show through New Play Fest, a national celebration of the future of theater. Producer Jodine McAuliffe says the theater group applied 2 years ago, committing to staging a never-before-seen show. In exchange, they've had an unusual opportunity to be part of bringing the show to life in collaboration with its playwright.
We're able to communicate back and forth and make some decisions about adjustments we could make to the play. And so it's been a very fun process.
McAuliffe says the Kenai Performers will be recognized as the debuting company when other groups stage the show. The show's attendees will be part of something new.
That's really a feather in the cap for our community.
Laura Lindemann plays the tavern's proprietor, Louisa, who welcomes guests and keeps them in line. She also joins in recounting the grim events of the past to their out-of-town visitors.
Now you might want to pray, but you won't be raising a ruckus.
Though the show centers on a murder and a mystery, Lindemann says it's light and family-friendly.
It is funny. So people need to understand that it is a comedy and it's okay to laugh. And I don't think they'll have any problem with that.
Logan Parks plays Johnny, a stable boy, and says the show celebrates community and storytelling. He says it's a great opportunity for the Kenai performers to bring exciting, original, and new programming to town and to make a character his own.
You can't YouTube the show. You can't go and you can't go see what other actors have done. It really brings a new creative outlook, I think, to building a character because you get to build something fresh and brand new.
Robin Chai also likes that the show is a new experience for viewers as well as for the actors. Chai says it makes for a rare viewing experience where no one in the audience knows what will happen. She describes it only as a ghost story.
You don't want to give it away.
As Charlotte, a lady traveling across the country who stops at the tavern by chance, Chai ends up driving in the narrative through her inquisitive nature.
Kind of fun because the characters come together. Me and my cousin come into the play, and the whole tavern is telling us what the ghost is about.
The opening of a new show is a big deal, the show's producers say. To mark the occasion, they're serving a special Hair of the Hellhound beer at the concession stand. The company will also host a gala dinner with the playwright visiting from the East Coast this Sunday. Reporting from the Kenai Performers Theater, I'm Jake Dye.
Mystery at the Black Dog Tavern runs Fridays and Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. this weekend and next. Find more information or purchase tickets at kenaiperformers.org. And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Lori Townsend in Anchorage and from Jake Dye here in Kenai. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a terrific weekend. The KDLL Board of Directors meets at 5:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at KDLL Studios in the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District building in Kenai and over Zoom. Meetings are open to the public. If you have an item you'd like to submit for board consideration, email info@kdll.org. Or if you're interested in joining the board, call 907-513-1996.